Welcome to the Planner Pals podcast, a podcast with two true Planner Pals. My name is Mark, or Mark Your Pages.
And I am Jess, or Jessie Curran. And in today's episode, we're going to be looking at community versus competition, in particular, how it kind of pertains to the planner community. We're going to be thinking about the changes that we've seen during our time in the planner community and kind of a bit of a consideration as to where we are now.
Well, before we get to that, we have to thank all of the amazing listeners out there for commenting on our last video all about Go Wild. It was fantastic just to hear from the community. But more than that, how awesome, Jess, was it to meet people face to face at Go Wild? It was such an amazing time.
I know. It's always such a good time getting to meet people in real life. Like anytime somebody comes to my end of the world and says like, hey, I'm like in Wellington. Do you want to meet up? I'm like, absolutely. Yes, I want to meet you. So having a place where like everybody is there already and everybody's kind of, you know, there for the same thing or whatnot. That was really exciting. It's always just like nice to be in the room where it happens as well.
And having it be my first like full experience as well, we have a lot to talk about. So we've decided that we're going to push some of our other ideas back a little bit because we're like, well, we have to obviously talk about Go Wild next time. We'll have just a wrap-up episode to really talk about just our full experiences. You shared so much helpful information. I do have to tell you that I was just, as I was editing that podcast and I was jotting down notes, I was like, okay, Mark, this is what it's going to be like. And while for the most part, it was all there, it just, the way that it happens is so cool. And I can't wait to share more about just like, you know, we talked about my prep to get ready for the crop, but just talk about that because that was next level fun. So excited to talk about that next time. So yay. Looking forward to that episode. Kind of again.
Yeah. Go Wild 2.0. Like, I don't know, the after effects of it, like the high come down and all of that. We're going to get all into that next week. But as said, in today's episode, yes, we're looking at community versus competition and how this kind of looks in our space in particular. So kicking off, like, what do we actually mean by this? So if we're thinking about our competitors or other people who are creating things in our niche, you probably know who they are. You know the names that are out there in terms of our space of the internet. For us, that would be very much like the bullet journaling space. So who else is putting out bullet journaling related content? Obviously, there's the Bullet Journal brand. I don't even think of them as a competitor because like they're the reason that we're here, kind of, I think. And that kind of, you know, having started this journey of doing bullet journaling and then sharing it online and stuff would not have happened without them. So I cannot even remotely think of them as a competitor. But trying to see the people who are doing the same kind of thing as you, not so much as somebody who you're kind of like fighting against for attention, but more so people that you can kind of build connections with in other ways. So that then everything feels a little bit more, I don't know, friendly, nice, approachable type deal.
Definitely. It's something that I feel like as you start to grow on social media, especially when you're posting about your bullet journal and your planner, you can definitely see others as competition. I've been there. I've definitely been like, oh, they have more followers than I did, or they started this before I did, or they had more likes. A lot of it, I think, has to do with like the stats part of it. I don't think I've ever been like, I don't like that person necessarily, but it all has to do a lot, like you said, about attention, who's looking at what, who's getting the play, who's getting those types of things when you start looking at that competition part of it. But I think over time, as we get in further into this episode, we'll talk more about that community part, which for me seems weird that the competition comes first and then eventually you just have that aha moment and you realize we're just all a part of the same community. Let's celebrate one another.
Yeah, I would very much agree. It's kind of interesting to think about it as like a transition and you might not necessarily notice it like a set point in time where it kind of like is a flicking of a switch or anything like that. But I will say that like when I started out, I was very much in kind of camp competition rather than camp community. And I'm very pleased that I'm much more in camp community now.
I'm the same exact way. When I look back and I think back on it, I'm just like, man, that really was kind of stifling you. I don't think a lot of people realize that when you're not accepting or open to that community part, people start to notice that when you're not interacting with the community, it kind of comes across almost like, well, you're too good, but you're a part of this community. So why wouldn't you interact with everyone? I think a really important thing to think about is that history, as I was talking about just a minute ago, when I got up and running, you really do feel like you're competing against others. And you really are for attention. I don't know over time, and I'm going to speak from an Instagram perspective right now, because I feel like that's where I've grown up the most. And I feel like I personally have seen a lot of competition there. It could creep over into YouTube now, but right now I'll just speak on the fact of like Instagram. Was, you know, when I got started up and running, I kind of felt like I had two kind of competitors in a way. One was just the general community, which was ginormous, especially when I was new and I came into it. And I was like, okay, there's all these people out here. But I think more than anything, early on, I saw other competitors, other males in the bullet journal space, mostly because there aren't a whole lot of those. That's a separate podcast episode all on its own, I feel like. But very much just like, okay, well, I'm vying for that viewership. I want people to look at my stuff, you know, at that point over theirs. But now, again, I was like, Mark, you're not in competition. Like, can we celebrate that there are actually other guys out here posting content? Because to be honest, like the whole reason when I first started, my username was Men Who Bullet. I was like, okay, I don't see any men, guys, anyone who identifies as male in this space. Eventually realizing why I changed my name in the long run is it doesn't have to just be male. It's more just this minimalist kind of fun, functional kind of space. And just be like, accept this. Let's support each other. Let's go through all of this. But early on for myself, it very much was that. And I think that just comes from a space of you want to be seen, you want to stand out. And in some cases, especially if you're taking on social media full time, that's your bread and butter, right? That's kind of, that's money at the end of the day. So you definitely want eyes on you versus someone else.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, with your niche being kind of like a smaller subset of the bullet journaling space, you know, like with kind of targeting the space of like men who bullet and males in our community and stuff, who we don't see as many of, especially in the more decorative space. Like they're there. I know you're there, but you just don't get surfaced as much, right? So it was always kind of interesting to see like, you know, the way that you do stuff and the way that you kind of like carve out and channel your niche in particular. And I can totally understand how like anybody else who's kind of like, I'm going to say encroaching on your turf. It's not really like that. Like we said, like we're trying to vibe towards more of a community kind of based kind of perspective on this. But seeing other people who are kind of doing the same thing that you're doing can feel threatening, like especially when you're just starting out, you haven't really established any kind of like viewership, audience, community around what you are doing. And it's like, oh, well, if other people are doing what I'm doing, is like that going to, you know, steal people away from me? I find for me, it's like you need to remind yourself that like people can follow more than just one creator, and they definitely do. Like,
oh, yeah.
And also when it comes to the idea of like putting things out there that either like other people have done before, or maybe once you put yours out, then they do it as well, kind of a thing. It's actually not a bad thing, especially if we think about it in terms of algorithms. So if we think about YouTube, right? So you go to YouTube, you look up a topic, you watch a video. The stuff that's suggested on the side panel is usually the same topic or very similar. So it's like, if I'm putting out a video that's like, let's say about, I don't know, health related layouts or something, and then there are five other creators that have put out things related to health related layouts, we're all going to like kind of grow together, feed off each other, because all of that stuff is going to get recommended alongside each other. So it's actually kind of a good thing in that sense, if people are doing the same thing to an extent.
So for yourself, Jess, where do you feel like, I guess, whether you, when you first started, even as you've moved through, did you have a similar type of competition view early on for yourself? Not that you're not part of like a separate demographic, but right, we're being honest with our numbers here, the male demographic versus female, very, very skewed and very unbalanced. What was your take on the competition part? Did you feel any of that early on, or even as you've continued to grow?
Oh, very much so. And I think it is very much tied to that kind of statistics and analytics, because as you're looking at your numbers, especially the public ones, like the ones that you can see at face value for yourself and for others, because that's really your only comparison point. You know, you put out a picture, somebody else puts out a picture the same day around the same time kind of a thing. It's like, oh, they've got like 500 more likes than me. Like, what did I do wrong? What are they doing that's so good? And it just gets into a really negative headspace of either like, you know, self-beration, like, oh gosh, like I have failed on this Instagram picture or whatever, versus kind of targeting them being like, oh, well, how are you special? Like, why do people think that yours is so great, but mine isn't? And it's kind of needing to take a little step back from that and be like, wow, check yourself, Jess. Like, just because you don't have the same number of likes does not mean that like the worth isn't the same or something like that.
Do you feel like you've seen that more on Instagram or YouTube or a mix of both of those?
I carry my baggage around with me, honestly, like wherever I'm going, like, yep. You know, see me up on Threads looking through people's likes. Absolutely not. I do not thread, but I will say that, like, going from Instagram to YouTube, because that was my first kind of big transition, I suppose, like, you know, building up one community, one platform, and then going to another and building that one up. I think that I did certainly take it with me, but I was still kind of in the early stages of my overall social media kind of journey. So I think that by the time that I made a YouTube channel, I know I had a decent-ish following on Instagram. It would have been in the some thousands. I wouldn't be able to tell you a specific number, but it was still kind of like in the early days of my social media use. So I was still very much seeing other people as something to be wary of, like, oh gosh, you know, if I put out the same thing as them, like, that's going to be a bad thing. Or if they do the same thing as me, that's a bad thing. It's not. It's not.
I see a lot of that more on YouTube, I feel like, for myself now, as I look at that, where I do a lot of that comparison and competition. It just feels like maybe it feels more competitive on YouTube than Instagram now for me, like at this moment, because YouTube is also tied to money, AdSense and all of those types of things, especially when you have similar content. As for me, it has nothing to do with the content itself being repetitive. There's only so many ideas that people can have. But I do the same thing when you'd mentioned that earlier. It's like, yeah, okay, what did they do different than I did? Why is their video getting more views than mine? And how can I like one up them in a way so next time people look at my video instead of theirs? And it is just a very negative kind of space to get into. I think it's healthy to be a little competitive. That kind of puts a little fire under you sometimes. But how can we use that creatively versus that competition negative force?
Yeah, for sure. And I would agree, like tying that idea to like money to the content and how like, you know, views matter in terms of the amount of revenue that you can get from your content on YouTube in particular. And views in particular are a hard one because not all views are created the same, yet I treat them the same and I shouldn't. Because obviously in your own analytics studio, in your own back end of YouTube, you know, you can see like the average view duration, like how long do people actually stick around and view the content. You can see like a really nice breakdown of like, you know, number of comments and stuff like this, like other interaction, how many people or, you know, rough percentage of people clicked the end card, like they made it to the end and they wanted to stay with you. You can see all that information, which those statistics could tell like a very different picture compared to just like the view count, where maybe somebody stuck around for 30 seconds on a video and decided it wasn't for them. So, you know, this is like almost a little revelation moment right now. I'm like, why do I pay so much attention to this? Because I do find myself comparing my views in particular to other creators. And I feel like I do it in a more healthy way now to an extent, but in the early days of YouTubing, it was certainly a not so healthy thing.
So let's dig into that a little bit more, because now this has become a therapy session, it seems like, which is a very good one to have. So let's continue on that point. If you think about that comparison and that competition community earlier on in your start versus now, how has that changed for you?
I think that my tendency to fall into comparison is lesser now, but when it hits, it is much more intense. I find that when I was first starting off, I would kind of compare myself to everyone, but it was usually kind of like a passing thought. So, you know, check out a bunch of different creators that we'd have on YouTube for bullet journaling in particular, because that's where we're at, and see what they're doing, see their numbers and stuff. But I wouldn't really let myself dwell on it because I was too busy in my hustle, too busy trying to build up my own stuff, too busy trying to get out my videos and all of that kind of thing. I feel like now as I've maybe streamlined my process a bit, maybe I just have more time to ruminate or something, but I do find that I don't ruminate as often. When I do ruminate, when I do find somebody that I really, really start comparing myself to, then it gets really bad. So to the extent where like my solution literally has just been to cold turkey quit watching their content, because I would find myself going onto somebody's video and they'd like, you know, do their intro and internal Jess, the bitch she is, would just like mock them like internally. I would never say it out loud because I know that like the first thought is not the good thought, right? Actions speak louder than words, all of this kind of thing. But internal Jess, who, if we kind of treat her like a separate person, she's just afraid. Like she's just afraid that somebody else, you know, in this instance, this person doing well is going to be like, you know, some kind of negative consequence on her. And rational Jess knows that that's not the case. Scared Jess, though, she doesn't know any better. Scared Jess needs to, like, you know, lash out and feel like she has some control over the situation. So she's going to be like, parroting back what the person says in her mocking tone, but that's not real Jess. That's scared Jess.
That's a very interesting way to kind of look at it, because I'll be very specific with this one. I have zero expectation for you to name names here, because I don't want anyone to feel this way, but I'll use this just as an example so that people maybe can get a good idea of like what this means, because I very much look up to this person. So Matt Ragland has been on YouTube for a long time. He's done a lot of bullet journal content. I was so excited to find his content early on when I started, because I wasn't seeing anybody else, you know, like me, so to say, inside of the space. So I loved watching his videos and going through that. I was amazed taking a look at his viewership and how many views he was getting for his videos and things like that. And so early on, I very much kind of looked up to him, and I still do to a certain extent, but especially when I was a much smaller account, not as well known, and he was, I was like, okay. And then as I started to grow, I was almost like, okay, like I'm starting to get up there a little bit. And then I started to almost kind of feel that way. And then Matt had decided to actually take on content full time. And I felt like he kind of went away for a little bit. He was doing his own kind of exploration and thing. And then I want to say maybe a handful of months ago, he came back, right? And he started to post more content. And instantly I was like, son of a bitch, like he's back. And then I stopped myself and I thought, actually, this is great. Like, this is awesome for him. This is awesome for other guys in this community to see that. But it was that split second. But it's exactly like what you just said. It was almost like, okay, Mark, you've been putting out content. You know, there's other guys on YouTube that are doing this as well. But I really felt like a lot of people were, you know, my account was growing. So obviously I knew that people were taking a look at my content. Now, was it because my stuff was getting better? Or was it because I was kind of the only person they were kind of seeing out there? And again, for that split second, I felt that way. And then I think it is the maturity of myself in social media that was like, no, Mark, this isn't bad. This is actually really good for the community. And like, I've always been a fan of his regardless, right? But just again, that's just an example, because again, a lot of love for Matt. Just again, everything he's done and continues to do, I always think is fantastic. But just as an example of showing like, this is real, it happens. It's exactly like you said. It was almost, maybe I felt almost too comfortable with my process and flow. And then suddenly I was like, great, this amazing creator's back. Everyone loves his videos. Are they going to stop watching mine to watch that? And he just realized it just is a totally different purview on planning than I do. And for anyone who loves like a super minimalistic, very productivity like focus, he's your guy. And I'm your guy for like the fun and functional stuff. That's kind of how I look at it now, because I feel more comfortable in my space, whereas before I didn't feel like I had that.
I think that's the thing. Yeah, if you set yourself apart in some way, then your niche is instantly different. There isn't a competition for that, which is kind of nice. I remember seeing a quote once. It said something like, you're not responsible for your first thought, but you are responsible for your second thought and your first action. And I need to remind myself of that, like those very reactionary kind of gut feelings that we get when we're presented with an opportunity to like be jealous or see somebody as competition rather than as a community member. That's not real us. We're responsible for the second thing that comes after that. You know, maybe like the rationalization of like, no, actually, this is a good thing. It's a good thing for our community to have different perspectives. It's nice when we have people who are on the same page as well. So it's like, if I'm putting out a piece of content about like, I don't know, ways to not burn out with your bullet journal, and somebody else makes the same kind of video with similar points, like it's just another opportunity for people to be reinforced with that idea. And that is a good thing. Need to see it more so like, we're all kind of on the same page. We're all like trying to build the community up in the same way. And that's not a negative thing.
Not at all. Not at all. So let's continue on that thought if you're okay with it, unless you have anything else you wanted to share about any of that competition part before we move on to like the negative effects of feeling that way.
No, I think that we can totally get into the negative things, because I find that I, and possibly a lot of other people too, have a big negativity bias. So when we think about like, you know, community versus competition, you know, instantly, just even with the term versus, my mind goes to the negative space. Like, what is the like the bad kind of like version of this look like? We will of course get into some positives as well, but starting with the negative, what do you think some of the negative consequences of that are?
I definitely think a big part could potentially be creativity burnout, right? And this is if you decide that you are going to counteract this feeling by overcompensating. So in the case of Instagram, that could come in the form of working extra hard to create more spreads and get more photos out there, doubling down in reels, which I think are a great idea overall, but you can easily get creatively burned out from that. And I think even more so would be pumping out even more content on something like YouTube, because that takes significantly more time to make that happen, because you got to create the content, record it, edit it, all the things that come along with it. And you and I both know this from creating content ourselves. You know, a 15-minute video can sometimes take an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, start to maybe more. Jess, you do a lot in your videos, so I have to give you a lot of respect. Mine, typically, I think at max, maybe by the time start to done, are probably in the 2 to 3 hour mark from like ideation, recording, editing, B-roll, all of that kind of stuff. So I feel like I can't imagine myself doing anything more than I already am, but that is how I feel like a lot of people could potentially burn out. What about for yourself? What other things do you think negatively affected you or others, perhaps?
I think that burnout is probably a big one, even if it's not in the sense of like trying to increase your workload to like make your content better or put more out. But it's just, you know, you spend this time, this energy, this effort to like, you know, for us, make a layout and then make the content around that, whether that be video or, you know, audio or photo or whatever else, and then to put it out there and see it not do as well as you were hoping, it's an opportunity to get really down on yourself. And honestly, that happens a lot of the time. You know, you put something out there, you expect it to be hopefully well received, fingers crossed, please universe, and then it gets like, I don't know, 2 likes and your mom comments on it or something. You're like, cool, thanks. I spent 6 hours on this for what? Kind of a thing.
I feel that way a lot for a lot of like bullet journal setup videos. Like for myself, for instance, that is something that I definitely compare myself to others, because I watch a lot of those myself and I check them out and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like a 45-minute video with a ton of likes. And then I go to create mine and they don't take as long. It's totally different. And then I used to get under 1,000 views on those types of YouTube videos. I actually stopped doing them because I was like, okay, Mark, that effort versus reward, that time kind of thing. I would spend all this time creating and editing and uploading that sometimes on a weekly basis and not get a whole lot of viewership. And it's not that it has to be a certain limit, but for me, like my number was always like 1,000 views for myself, because I always kind of trended a bit smaller on those. And then I did have that realization after a while of like, I'm just doing this almost, I'm competing with all these other people that are doing this. It's just not really worth my time. I like doing it. I'm doing it anyway on a weekly basis, but maybe I can utilize my time differently than, you know, putting out those videos constantly trying to compete with everybody else out there.
Yeah. And I think that after a while, like if you start to really start chasing those views or chasing likes or anything like this, you really just kind of suck the joy out of the whole process. Like there's a reason that, you know, you and I, and there's a reason that you may be listening, started creating content if you're creating content. You know, why? What was that? Like get back to that kind of purpose about it. For me, it was really about, I have ideas and I want to share them with other people because I think they could be helpful. At the end of the day, if a post helps like one person, then technically speaking, that's like, you know, checking the box, mission fulfilled. Like I have shared an idea, it was useful to somebody. I think it can be a little bit difficult, you know, when it's that kind of a mission or an aim, and knowing whether or not, you know, mission has actually been accomplished without those kind of like, you know, viewership kind of statistics or comments saying to the fact, not that I'm like, you know, sitting there expecting every single person who got value out of one of my pieces of content to come back and tell me like, oh my God, Jess, this layout like changed my life or whatever. Because oftentimes they're not going to do that. They might just be a little bit helpful and that's still good. It's still okay, right? Like tiny wins are still wins. But if you're kind of, you know, constantly chasing this idea of like, need to have more viewers, need to have more likes, need to have more comments or whatever else, it starts to be more about that than about the enjoyment and fulfillment of that kind of like initial kickoff of like why you started.
Yeah, the validation is always nice, no doubt about it. As a creator, as a performer, you know, so to say, of what we're doing, right? The validation is definitely nice. I definitely like what you just said, though, this idea of almost going back to why did you start doing this? Because I just remember very early on for myself, you know, my why most certainly was to try to inspire others, especially other guys in the community, But now it's more just like anybody that doesn't want to have overly decorative spreads, that wants a functional bullet journal while also sometimes having fun and geeking out about stationery. Like, I remind myself about that all the time, because you do always feel like you're kind of trying to one up what's happening in the community, what's happening on Reels, how are people approaching things? Just taking that moment just to really think about that is a really good reflection point, I think. And for anyone who's maybe feeling that way, overwhelmed, overrun by that comparison troll that comes at you sometimes, sitting back and saying, well, why did I even start this in the beginning? Because if it's for a very selfish reason and not for other pieces, you may find yourself maybe needing to take a break so that you don't go too far down that depressive, you know, sucking the joy out of life and fun, because that's not what this is supposed to be about.
No, we're getting kind of, you know, into the weeds of the negative parts of competition in particular, but that's not to say that it isn't without its merits. I think that competition can be a good thing, in particular for just like striving to be better. I find that, you know, you see people putting out content that's kind of similar to yours, or maybe like something that you wanted to do in particular. That is such a big one. The number of ideas I have that take so long to execute on, and having some competition kind of just lights a fire under my butt to be like, Jess, you need to do this. Do you find that as well? Or?
Oh, all the time, especially when I have an idea that's in the hopper or I have an outline and then I see someone put out a video on that. And in my brain, I'm almost like, damn it, Mark, like you should have just followed through on that faster, because you could have been the first one out with that. And then I'm always like, well, now I can't put it out in the next 2-3 weeks, because then someone's going to think I'm copying them. And I just put myself into this kind of weird space. But that is definitely something where I think about that often. Like, Mark, when you know you have a good idea or you think it's going to go really well, just buckle down, get it done, get it out, and then you'll just feel better about that than like losing out on an idea, for sure. But it is that fire that you get sometimes that you're like, I just needed someone to kick me in the butt to be like, yeah, do this thing. And that's a great example for me where I'm always like, damn it, I should have just did it. I knew I should have not just rested on my laurels waiting for that to happen, you know?
I have two very specific examples about that. One of them was on YouTube. So Erin of Erin Floater Designs put out a couple of videos about her Bujo Basic series. And I was like, I was going to do that. I'm like, Jessica, you have said that you are going to do this for like 2.5 years. You cannot get angry because Erin actually did the thing, right? Yeah. And I still did the thing. I still ended up doing it. Mine ended up being like a 40 video series where each of the videos were like 6 minutes or less. It was very kind of like little bite-sized pieces, and it was effectively ended up being like a Bujo course. And it was a piece of work that I was very proud of, but I don't think I would have actually gotten on and done it if Erin hadn't have put hers out. So, you know, shout out to Erin. You lit the fire under my butt and I got it done.
And you got it done very well too. I have to say that your Bujo series was like very in depth. If I think about any of mine that have been like, you know, starting in your bullet journal, how to get started, mine are just like little 15-20 minute chunks on like what it is, whereas like yours were fantastic because it was like broke down like the terms, the pieces and everything. I felt like I left there learning more, and I've been doing it for a really long time.
You should have seen the planning stages of that. I had like 3 iterations of what I was just calling my crazy map, which was effectively like, start with just a brainstorm, like these are all of the different things that we want to talk about, and then the next one was like a roadmap of like, okay, well, we're gonna make this video and it's gonna lead to this one, it's gonna lead to this one, it's gonna lead to this one. It turned into this very large project that took me a hot minute to do, but now as it's done, I'm like, that is a permanent resource. Because of your kind of competitive nature with others, it actually came into fruition, so I'm feeling very good about that. The other one that I had was a reel, actually, and I'm not a fan of making reels. I try.
You're so good at them, though. You make the best educational reels. I'm over here like, you know, lip syncing to some dumb sound, and you're like, here's how to do a thing very specifically with great information. I'm like, damn, she's good at those.
I find it to be kind of like a little challenge because I like to do things in depth. I like to really give people a lot of detail. But of course, with a reel, you only have like 90 seconds. So I'm like, okay, well, what is the most pared down, abridged version of this that I can give people that is still actually useful? So it's kind of like, you know, that little challenge for myself to get that information across as quickly as possible. But the reel in particular that I was going to do was actually more of a fun one. And you guys probably saw them. They were fairly recent, but it was like, what? All that work and what did it get?
Oh, yeah. You did one of those.
Why did I do it? Yeah, I know. I was going to do it, and I, you know, procrastinated. And then I can't remember for the life of me who did it. And now I feel really bad about it because obviously in the moment I was like, wow, you've like ruined my day. Not really. You didn't ruin my day. Alrighty. It was scared Jess. It was small child Jess being wah, wah, wah. No. All right. But they put theirs out and I was like, okay, I could not do it now because like it's already been done, but we don't have exactly the same audiences. So there's no harm in putting it out. And even if somebody does think that I copied them, kind of a thing, like, you know, I know in myself that technically speaking, I didn't, even though it ends up kind of being the same thing. If anything, I'm copying the, like, you know, 600 other people that I saw do it as I was scrolling through my Reels feed. So it's kind of reminding myself that, like, just because somebody else has done it before and now I'm doing it doesn't necessarily mean it's actually a copy. Like, you know, we can have inspired by rather than like a full recreation of. Like, if I was breaking down their reel shot by shot and being like, alrighty, I'm going to like, you know, make eye contact with the camera in exactly the same way and I'm going to hold my journal in exactly the same way, then I'm like, okay, now we should be concerned because that's a whole new level of like copying. But
that's one of the things that is very interesting about Reels. Is exactly what you said. It's like thousands, millions in some cases of people doing that. I mean, I technically, I guess, am stealing from other genres because a lot of the funny or like very interesting sounds, for whatever reason, BookTok is the hottest for that type of thing for some reason. And so I see a lot of stuff there. But I'm not going to lie to you, I do get that feeling when I put something out, I haven't seen anyone else in the Bullet Journal Planner community do it. And then like I see like another creator do the same exact thing. Not exactly the same. I mean, it's like a 7-second sound. You can only do so much. And for some ideas, it's very limited on like showing a thing. So I can't get mad if someone else is showing their notebook with this sound because, well, all I did was show a notebook. It's not exactly the same, but it's 5 seconds. What are you going to really do? I have to remind myself of that often because I do pride myself on finding cool new sounds and trending things and trying to get them out there. Where I'm like, you're trying to steal my fire. But then I'm just like, Mark, everyone's going to forget about this in less than 2 days. Move along, buddy. You're going to be all right.
I think it's also that kind of like mindset shift of like, rather than viewing it as a, oh, you're trying to steal my idea that I stole from somebody else or whatnot. It's more just like a, you find the same things funny that I do. Like that's a point of connection as well. So it's like, you found this entertaining or like, you know, thought it would be entertaining and enjoyable. And I did as well. And that's why we both put the same thing out. One of the kind of like, I'm going to call it like a recreation train almost. I think my best example of this was I used to make these layouts in my journal, which were effectively like planning spaces for my next monthly setup. So I'd have a space for like, you know, color swatches, writing down any kind of like decoration notes of what I kind of wanted the vibes to be, any of the layouts that I wanted to include, the font that I wanted to include, that kind of stuff. And for a while, I found them quite useful. I'd post some of them on social media, put them on YouTube, whatever else. And then Tori of Creative Mind Coffee Grinds, shout out, she thought that they were, you know, looked useful, looked interesting. So she started doing them herself with full credits because we love giving credit, which is great. So I always appreciated when she tagged me in them. And over time, I stopped doing mine and she kind of kept on going with the ones she was making and tweaking them and changing them to the point where, like, you know, she'd give me credit for it, like, you know, original idea by Jess. And I'm like, it looks completely different now, Tori. This is yours. But she effectively like re-inspired me to start making them again, which I thought was kind of cute. So it's like, you know, I inspired her, then she kind of changed it, tweaked it, and then she inspired me and then I tweaked it and changed it. So it's like by actually sharing this stuff, letting other people share the same ideas that you shared as well, it's like this iterative process where you can build it up to something that's better than the initial concept that you had by yourself. So I thought that was really valuable.
Do you feel like there is a time limit where you have to give credit? And then is there a time when you feel like you no longer have to, especially if you've really taken or grasped onto something? And let me ask you that question first, because I have a very specific example about this, about a very good friend of ours that we've mentioned on this podcast. We might as well just have Julia on this podcast at this point as a guest, because we talk about her a lot. But let me ask you that question first, and I'll give you my specific example about her.
That's a great question, because I think it's really hard thinking about like what that kind of time frame should be, and then considering our perspective of like the time frame for ourselves versus the time frame for other people. Because I find that, like, you know, somebody might take my meal log that I used to do quite often. And, you know, for the first couple of months, they'll like tag me and say like inspired by Jess kind of thing. Sweet. And then they get to like the third or fourth month and they won't tag me. And there's that like small moment where I'm like, wow, oh my gosh, am I not good enough for you anymore? And it's like, Jess, you'd probably do exactly the same thing. Like, you cannot be a persnickety biscuit because they didn't tag you when you would literally do the same thing. But again, you know, the first thought isn't the one that matters. It's the second thought and the one that we actually act on. That's the one that matters. So the one I act on is commenting saying, oh my gosh, I'm glad this is still working for you. Yay, smiley face, XOXO gossip goat.
My is always been around ink swatches. It sounds very silly, but I feel like part of the gatekeeping skill set of this. You mentioned you asked on your stories about this topic, and gatekeeping was one of those things that came up. And this is something that for me personally is one of those where I don't know at what point I no longer have to provide credit. So when I started doing ink swatches, I was just, you know, using a pen and kind of making a circle on a page. And then there's someone else in this community that does really cool ink swatches. And I always saw them. I was always blown away by it. I was like, oh, wow. And then one time I just asked them, I said, how did you do this? And they were like, well, look at this video. And it was someone who was using a plastic bag. They would put ink on a paper, put a plastic bag over top and move it around. And so I was doing that. And I was like, okay. Then I started giving credit to it. And then I watched Julia's video where she did all the different ways to make ink swatches. And she used a plastic spoon. And now that's the only way that I make ink swatches. And so early on, I was like making these ink swatches and I would tag her in every single video. And then I'm like, at this point now, I don't mind doing it because I love her. I feel like she deserves all the credit in the world for her videos, right? But I'm just like, do I always have to tag her on this? Or is there like a time in which it's just a technique that I learned from her that I'm just doing myself now? Not that I don't want to give her credit, make that very clear, but it's just, is it just a part of what I'm doing now of how I do it? So I don't know. I feel like, is that something you would ask somebody? I mean, it's a skill. I'm sure that even for her, she's not the first person to use a plastic spoon to do that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that one. But I guess my question is like, is there a time limit on that? Or just always give credit because you want to give credit where it's due?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because, yeah, I think that there is probably a sweet spot. I just don't know what it is. And it probably is different depending on, like, I'm going to say, like, the level of the idea or, like, the size of the idea almost. So a layout that I know that I use quite a lot, or on and off quite a lot, is the productivity tracker, or I think it was called the productivity level board when it was originally shared by the Boosted Journal. I really loved what they did with it when they shared it. So I made a video about it kind of expanding on that, saying, like, you know, this is the original. This is how I actually use it. This is some kind of ideas for it and stuff. But now a lot of people give me credit for it because they saw it from me. And I'm like, well, yes, I shared the idea to you. So it makes sense as to why you would give me credit. And you are technically using my version of it. But that version was inspired by the Boosted Journal's original version. So it kind of gets to this little kind of like gray area of like, well, where are we actually going to give credit? Are we going to give credit at the very initial idea? Because then I suppose everything should go back to the person who like invented paper or something. Like, this is made possible because of that one guy who mashed up a tree kind of a thing. So yeah, there is definitely some kind of a time frame. I'm just not too sure what it is.
So let's continue down this idea, because I know that a really big part of the community competition part has to do with this recreation slash, I don't know what we're going to call it, stealing. You know, it has a lot of these different pieces where you're like, well, what's the difference between inspiration, recreation, and then outright stealing it? Because I feel like that credit part is a part of it. But like we just talked about, how long do you give credit to something before it's just your own version of it? What are your thoughts on the idea of recreating spreads? Does it always have to be slightly tweaked? Or what would you consider it if someone literally is copying word for word? We've talked about this before where someone did that with a piece of your work. Like, what is your general thought on that?
I think that there's nothing technically wrong with a full-blown recreation. Like, I am not opposed to people taking my layout as they've seen it in my journal and fully recreating it. If you want to write down my to-do list for the day, go forth. I don't think it'll be very helpful for you.
Can you just do but those things for me while you're at it?
Yeah, I'm like, can you please wash my windows? Oh my gosh. I'm like, I'm not getting up on a ladder. I don't like being more than like a foot off the ground at most. But I find that there is merit to recreation, especially if, like, you know, you're practicing artistic skills or, you know, just getting a feel for whether a layout's actually going to work for you in the kind of like layout that you saw it in to start with. That makes sense as long as it's something that you think is actually going to work for you. Like, if you're recreating something just because, like, oh, that got 2,000 likes, maybe if I recreate it, I could get like a fraction of that as well. Like, that this. It doesn't seem to be a lot of point in that. I think that is also a very biased mindset, though, because I'm coming from a point of like, my journal should be useful. My journal should not just be performative. And if you're recreating something just for the sake of getting likes, it does feel performative. If you're going to recreate something, though, at least at the minimum, the very first instance you share it, it should have a credit back to the person that you recreated it from. That's my personal take on that.
And I feel like there might be a bit of strategy. I mean, at Go Wild, we got to meet Amanda Rach Lee, and I feel like a lot of her platform, especially with her videos and her monthly setups, she's sharing those, not with the expectation, but understanding that a lot of people do recreate her things, but she is showing you exactly how it's done. So it's almost inviting a recreation to it. And I'm guessing that most of the time people will credit her on those things, but they may not always do that. So I think there's also maybe content that we may create that has the purpose of recreation versus if I'm doing something in my journal that's very personal for me, but then I choose to share it. You know, I want to inspire other people, but sometimes it's like, well, if you can do exactly that and then not credit me because you saw it from me, there is like that line I feel like that we're on where it feels like someone is stealing something from you. They were inspired by you, but did it exactly as it was. I guess there's probably also certain levels of things. Take like the Eisenhower method, for instance. Like if someone uses the Eisenhower method, maybe they didn't know the name of it. They saw me create it in my journal and I maybe mentioned it, but they're like, oh, I saw Mark do this about prioritization. But it's like the Eisenhower method. It's not Mark's or Jess's creation. It's almost like at some point you don't have to give credit. I think it's also just to be able to name it. Like that's what it's called. Therefore, we use it. It just kind of moves into that spot sometimes where I feel like at what point is it your idea versus just someone else's idea? And does it really matter at the end of the day?
I think that the biggest one that irks me, and this is going to show Jess's, like, you know, the little scared Jess, the little bitchy scared Jess, the one that irks the ever-loving crap out of me is the rolling weekly. I'm like, there's nothing rolling about it. It's just daily. So, like, I think it probably comes from a part of, like, I don't really understand. I think every time I try and do a more of a deep dive into it to really understand what this is about, I get to the same conclusion of, like, there's nothing rolling about this weekly. Like, it's just tasks go from day to day. So I'm like, it's like a rolling daily more than it is a rolling weekly. Maybe I'm just like caught up on the terminology or whatnot.
It might be because I was just researching the bullet journal. Someone mentioned to me on a YouTube comment, have you explored the bullet journal time ladder? I was like, I've never heard of the time ladder before. And I went and looked it up and I was like, it's the rolling weekly, it's the rolling daily. It looks almost exactly like that, but I've never heard the term time ladder before. But it's exactly what we always talk about. So it's like, well, okay, they're calling it the time ladder. It's a rolling weekly. Then who created it? Does it matter? Should we just say, hey, I saw this on the bullet journal website, or I saw it from here and just sharing that, or just create it yourself and be like, this is called the time ladder. No one cares where I learned about it from. Maybe I can inspire you with it now. I don't know.
Because this shows obviously my ignorance towards it. The Rolling Weekly utilizes the Alistair method. Yes?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying to you. So is it the Alistair method? Is it a time ladder? Is it a, you know, like wherever it is, there's just a lot of different methods out there that kind of done it. So I guess you have to go back and be like, okay. Well, I mean, this blog post that I had up because I've been reading about it this week was posted in 2015 from bulletjournal.com. Where did they get it from? You know, like I think on theirs, they said that the time ladder was inspired by Bill Westerman of DIY Fish. I have no idea who that is. Should I be crediting him for this or Bullet Journal? You know, I think that's where we get into the whole thing. So maybe we just collectively as a community say, this is where I learned about it from, or a lot of cases, and I know we talk about this with people who find things on Pinterest and then share them. Maybe we just should do a little bit more research to understand the basics of that before we go sharing information that we don't know about.
I think this is a really good topic to get into, and we obviously have a lot of thoughts on it. So I think that we're going to have to do like a full separate episode of just like, I don't know, recreation, inspiration, and straight up theft in the planner community, because I know that you guys will also have a lot of thoughts on it. So stay tuned for an episode on that.
Yeah, that has its whole other part. So let's go ahead and switch gears to talking about moving from the competition into how do we build a community around this? Because for myself personally, in my life right now, my bullet journal, social media maturity, I feel like the focus is on the community now, no longer necessarily competition. Again, I know who else is out there who is my competition, not in an unfriendly way. So, you know, how do I continue moving forward with this idea of building out community instead of thinking about the negativity? And I'm going to turn this to you, Jess, because I feel like you have such an amazing community.
I think we both have great communities, and I think we have a lot of overlap in our community as well, because like what we've got, like, you know, Planner Pals, the Planner Pal podcast and their community, and we've got like Jessie Curran community, and we've got the Men Who Bullet Now Mark Your Pages community. I'm never going to be able to not say Men Who Bullet. It's such a problem, but
sorry.
Yeah, I know, right? Changing things up. It's all good. I'll get there eventually. But we obviously have a lot of overlap in our communities as well. And we have a lot of overlap with other people who are in our niche. I mean, like, obviously, because oftentimes if you're going to follow one bullet journal creator, you're going to follow a couple because they're all sharing great ideas. And I think that getting from that kind of like everybody is a competitor to like everybody is a connection kind of mindset does take a lot of time. I'm certainly not to the point where everybody is a connection. And I think that's probably a lot of my own kind of like scared Jess talking again, you know, feeling awkward reaching out to people who maybe have a bigger following than me and all of that. That's something I've carried the entire way through. Even if it's just kind of like starting off with the really kind of basics, you know, like commenting on other people's stuff, you know, giving credit where credit is due, like we talked about, all of those are little opportunities, little moments where you can make a connection with somebody else. And they are small, but they're also one of the ones that are most valuable. You share a layout talking about how you like struggled to complete your habits this month or something. So your habit tracker looks like trash. Obviously I died, kind of a thing. And it gives an opportunity for other people to comment saying like, you know, I struggle with that as well. Like you find these commonalities with people in sharing this stuff and in commenting on other people's things. And that's really valuable. They're only small, but they do add up over time.
Absolutely. And something else you can do too, and I've actually done this a lot more over time. Let's take a look at this podcast right now. Not again, I'll say competition in a friendly way for us, just another creator out there though. And this wasn't a conniving way of doing this, but collaborating, right, is another really good way to build that community. Now, ours is much more than that because we are planner friends before we were Planner Pals podcast. So like that already existed there. So honestly, for me, it was like, let's get Jessica. She's so awesome. And it'd be great to have this similar but opposing thought to kind of where we are on this. But same with content creation. I love doing this, especially on Reels and stuff like that, is collaborating with other people in that same space. Because again, if you're trying to grow, right, it's great to have more of that out there. It's, you know, I have a lot of smaller creators that'll reach out to me and be like, hey, do you want to collab? I'm like, I love doing this stuff. Sure. I know what they're trying to get out of it. I don't think it's always a negative thing per se, but it's also just like that might be someone new that, you know, I get exposed to their community and they're getting exposed to my community. And I think it's always done, hopefully, at least the people that I'm collaborating with in a very positive way, right? I don't see it as, oh, I'm just trying to grow and I'm reaching out to you. I think some of those times you can see that. I think we get the same messages sometimes with people that are like, can I pay you for the post about my content? You're like, ew, like, no. Like,
well, they're not even going to pay you. They're just like, hey, can I have a shout out like with my 5 followers? And I'm like, I know you're trying to build a thing, but I'm like, let's maybe build up a bit of content before I'm going to shout you out. Oftentimes, if I'm going to do a shout out, it's just because I wanted to. It's not because somebody's paying me. It's not because somebody's asked me. It's because like I came across your content. I loved what I saw. And I was like, more people need to know about this. So, you know, any kind of those shout outs on Instagram stories or in a YouTube video or whatever else, that's usually what it is. I love your point about collaborating with others though, because hands down, my favorite video from this year was the one where I got a bunch of different bullet journal creators and we all collaborated to make a piece of content. That
was awesome.
It was a standout. And I remember going into it being like, oh my God, like, what if they think I'm skeevy? Like, what if they just like don't want to work with me because they're just like, ew, you're gross. Like, again, scared Jess, you know, speaking from this place of fear, it's like, shut the heck up, right? You're shutting yourself up from the opportunity to make connections with others. Let's just put ourselves out there and, you know, just ask them, like, you know, do you want to? No expectations on that. So it was really great that people wanted to get involved.
also really does show that same type of like general maturity, that mental maturity. Like you said, back in the day, it was very much, oh, they're my competition. I hate watching their content, or I'm not watching their content at all because it's what it is. I think that video is a really great example because a number of those people in that video I see on YouTube all the time. And you're just, I do the same thing though. I'm like watching this, like, why? They have like 80,000 views on this. I've done a similar thing. And it's just, you know, it's that constant battle in your brain where you, like, somebody would say, I'm not going to reach out to that person. Like, they're my competitor. Like, I'm trying to beat them. Why would I do something with them? But instead to turn that around and say, hey, I'm reaching out to you. First of all, maybe we've never interacted before, right? You start to build that. I feel weird saying this, but I guess like before I knew you, right? Like I knew Jessie Curran, not you, Jess. So it was one of those things where I was like, you know, her, she's got all of these followers and these amazing videos. Like I want kind of that thing. But when you reach out to someone and you get to know them and you realize there's so much more than just what you're seeing on video or in photos or online, you have this opportunity for really cool friendship. I think we'll use ourselves as that example in this, right? Like there's so much more that can come out of that if you just change your way of thinking instead of it being like, I don't want to interact with them or see their stuff or whatever else. Maybe there's an opportunity to collaborate with them, or maybe there's just a general, hey, how you doing? Like I've talked with Matt as a good example a few times, nothing very deep or anything like that, but early on, especially when I was growing and he gave me some advice and I was very open to, you know, the things he was sharing. What's to say that there's not other things you have in common? You know, like he's a dad as well. So am I. He has a whole entire like dad forum now that he's building a lot of content around too. And like, again, if I would have been like, oh, I'm not looking at any of his content because he's my competition, I would never found out about these other great communities that exist out there. So I think for anyone that maybe in that mindset realize there's a lot more opportunity if you look at it in a positive light than if you look at it as a negative kind of fight versus a love.
And it's also just an opportunity to kind of like, I'm going to say like humanize creators, which is a really, it feels strange to say, because like, obviously we're all humans and we're making content as people, unless, I don't know, you're an AI robot listening to this, then like shout outs to you, but probably not. You know, it's just that opportunity to see that there is more to this creator, more to this person than just what you see online, you know. Like we talked about before, that idea of, you know, making connections, finding similar struggle points, similar experiences throughout whatever it is we're doing, the stuff that we don't necessarily get to see online. And it's like, if we're not going to reach out and take the time to kind of recognize that, like, this is the potential for someone I could make a connection with, then you're going to miss out on the opportunity to really build up that more in-depth picture of them as a person. It would feel like a loss, you know. I think about it in terms of the creator friends that we have, and it's like, what would life be like if I hadn't opened myself up to the possibility of like making a connection with them, even if it's not like you're kind of going in with the mindset of like you're going to be my bestie for life or anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I wasn't even open to the concept of like making you a connection rather than a competitor, like how would things be different, kind of a thing. I think that what would be really good this week, instead of maybe going with a specific question, is just thinking about like, who in our community would you like to shout out? Like, is there anybody in the community who you think they're doing great work, they're not getting like the love and appreciation that you think that they deserve? It could be maybe your planet bestie, just somebody that you really admire and look up to, anybody. Let us know either on the comments if you're watching here on YouTube, or you can email us at planetpalspodcast@gmail.com, or hit us up on Instagram at planetpalspodcast. I think that someone I would like to shout out would probably be Valerie of Bright Violet Arts. She does the most amazing stuff with paint markers. Her work is always gorgeous. Every single video is totally worth a watch, so make sure that you go and check her out. Mark, who would you shout out?
So the person I want to shout out is the person that I mentioned before that had the amazing swatches that I was doing that. And that's Leska Wright. Just absolutely amazing fountain pen content. Like if you just appreciate the look of fountain pens, if you appreciate the look of inks, that is the account that you want. That's the person who turned me on to the really cool ink swatches before I started using the plastic spoon. It's art is what it is. So big shout out to Leska Wright. Just because they're amazing and you should check out their stuff because it's beautiful.
And both of those are linked in the description show notes. So do make sure to check them out and let us know who you think deserves a shout out. In our next episode, we're going to be chatting more about Go Wild, doing a bit of a digest after the fact, because we certainly have thoughts. We're going to talk about the highlights, the things that were really exciting, the things that we were initially excited about and maybe weren't as exciting when we actually got to experience them. So I'm excited to get into that conversation with you, Mark.
Same, Jess. I can't wait. And again, it was so awesome meeting face to face. And I hope you enjoyed the little present that I got you that I said I was going to get you as well. So maybe we can talk about next episode, especially around Go Wild, because I can't wait to hear all your wonderful thoughts about the cool thing I got you.
And for you, Planner Pals, thank you for watching, and we will see you in the next episode.